You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Welcome to episode 42 of the Infinite Loopback Podcast. We have a lot to cover this week, surprisingly, because, you know, we already covered everything for WWDC, but we had a couple of cool things to talk about this week. So, Jim, we're going to kick it off with you. You had a phenomenal experience at the Apple Store with tech support this week. I was in Kentucky last week. Jim FaceTimed me. I'm like, I can't talk. I have limited bandwidth. So I'm sitting there working on a router, and I start getting these text messages. This is fantastic. So, Jim, take it away. Tell us what happened with your MacBook Pro.
So I was so excited. I just walked out of the store. I'm like, I'm going to FaceTime Brian and just tell him what happened because it was just too much for a text. And I actually called Brad too. And like 3 days later, I get a text back from Brad. He's like, did you call me? I'm like, yeah. So everybody, I mean, if you've been following along, I've had trouble with this MacBook Pro. So I got one. The keyboard was messed up immediately. They couldn't fix it. So I just returned it and I got another one. So that was end of December. The MacBook's been okay for the last 6 months. I wouldn't say it's been a perfect piece of hardware. I've definitely had some issues with it. And then about a month ago or so, I spilled a small amount of Sprite on it while working late at night at the hotel. And it wasn't a whole lot of Sprite, but it was enough to get under the keys a little bit and make the keys stick or not move. The laptop itself functioned perfectly. There was no damage to the logic board, nothing else. So I brought it to the Apple Store. They sent it off to get it fixed. A couple days later, I get an email back that says, hi, we've detected that there was liquids here, and they want $680 to fix 5 keys on my keyboard. $680. I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I just said, just return it. Just send it back to me, and I'll figure it out. And I was going to take it to someplace local. So I got the keyboard back, or I got the laptop back, and the keyboard was even more messed up than before because they had popped the keys off to fix it or see what was going on with it. And when they popped them back on, they weren't on very good. So I'm like, well, now it's even worse than it was, and they want $680 to fix it. So I started to use my older 13-inch MacBook Pro from late 2014, I think is what it was. Great little laptop. I still love using it. I used that for a couple of weeks, and finally I was like, I just need to bite the bullet and send this laptop off, get it fixed, and then decide what I'm going to do with it. Maybe I'll just sell it and keep using this 13-inch, or, you know, we'll just see. I didn't even schedule an appointment at the Apple Store. I just wanted to show up and say, hey, this is what happened. Send it off and get it fixed, and I'll pay for it. I happened upon the luckiest event in recent history for me. Ben at the North Park Apple Store here in Dallas was the blue shirt I got that Saturday. And so I started explaining what I just said here to Ben. And he was like, you know, you're an early adopter. You know, you're clearly a Mac fan, an Apple fan. And I just don't feel like, you know, we've done you service with this laptop. You know, you've had a tough time with it. He's like, any other model of laptop come in here right now with the issue that you had, we would take it in the back, we would pop some keys off, we would pop some keys for you and send you on your way. He's like, we're 6 months into this model and they still haven't sent us the tool in store to fix those keys and we still don't have keycaps. They still can't do that in store 6 months after this model is out.
The Apple Store employees start using iFixit, haha.
Yeah. So we went through 4 or 5 different scenarios. One of the first things we talked about, and one of the things we didn't actually cover in our WWDC follow-up, was Apple actually announced AppleCare Plus for Macs that cover accidents. You have to buy it in the first 60 days of owning the Mac now, and it's pretty expensive. It's like $449, which is, you know, pretty pricey.
I thought it was $349 or something, right? Is it over $400?
It's $349 or $449. One of y'all can look that up while I'm talking. It was pricey, but we couldn't add that to mine because it had been greater than 6 months. Then we talked about just returning the Mac right there and then letting me rebuy it with AppleCare Plus to at least help me out. You know, I'd pay the AppleCare Plus, pay the deductible, get it fixed. We couldn't do that because my...
Sorry, it's $269.
Actually, no. AppleCare Plus...
No, I think mine was more than that.
I got this. AppleCare Plus for 15-inch MacBook Pro is $379.
I'm sorry, I must have been looking at the 13. My bad.
Yeah, so that's what... It was like $400. So we were going to, you know, his first thing was we could return it and then let you buy the AppleCare Plus. We couldn't do that because it was a custom ordered MacBook Pro. So he didn't have a SKU to sell it back to me with. Brian, I think you've had.
Yep. I went through that with my iMac when I tried to be all clever and use my 10%. Like Discover was offering 10% back for any purchase made in the Apple Store, but you couldn't do it online. So I bought a fully loaded like $4,500 iMac. And as soon as it came in, this is my birthday, my 40th birthday, I go to pick it up and I'm like, okay, I want to return it and rebuy it. And I explain, and the Apple Store people were real helpful, but the moment they returned it, it flagged it for return to warehouse. Like they couldn't resell it. So they had to get real clever on how to, they weren't going to let that walk out the door, by the way. So they figured it out. But yeah, that's a big weird problem, especially since you probably ordered yours with extra options than what you could buy it off the shelf.
Right. So we went through all these options. Even, you know, he talked about returning it to me, giving me Apple credit, you know, like a gift card. He couldn't do that because they can only do gift cards up to $2,000, and it was a $3,500 purchase. What we ended on, and this is shocking still to me now, it's just so amazing. He's like, it'll take a couple of days, but I'll just let you return it, and it'll credit the card that you bought it on. And I was like, really? I mean, that you'll do that? And he's like, this has not been a good experience for you with Apple, with this MacBook. You know, I think you deserve it, or, you don't deserve the service that you've had from this laptop. So I returned it that day.
That's the understatement of the year.
Went home, was able to order a 15-inch now with Kaby Lake. So it's even the newer processors. I went ahead and, because of my great luck on the day, I felt inclined to, I went ahead and bumped up the processor to the top of the line 3.1, because I didn't have the top of the line processor before. What I had bumped up was the graphics RAM and the 1 terabyte SSD. So now the graphics are already built into the top model. You don't have to upgrade from 1 to 2 or 2 to 4, whatever it was. And so I got the 1 terabyte SSD with the 3.1 gigahertz Kaby Lake with that new $400 AppleCare Plus right there when I checked out, added it right to the cart. This laptop came to $4,000, but it is ordered and it should be in right around July 4th. I went ahead and just had it shipped to that North Park Apple store. Since I'm going to be on vacation next week, I didn't want it hanging out at the apartment or whatever. So I just shipped it to the store. And when I return from vacation, I'll go get it. So, you know, just great story. Again, shout out to Ben at the North Park Apple store here in Dallas. He really went above and beyond the call of duty to help an Apple fan and really restored my faith in Apple. I mean, just a damn fine example of customer service.
Which is really weird because we recorded last week's episode maybe a day and a half, 2 days before you went and did this. And one of the things that we talked about, if you listen to the last episode, is, and it was even the title of the episode entitled The Sticky Experience, no pun intended with the Sprite in your keyboard. But we talked about how Apple's customer support, how their focus on that customer satisfaction is second to none. That would have never happened to you at a Best Buy with some HP or Dell laptop. That would have never, ever, ever happened. And I can count, I took in, of course, this takes the cake. This is the best story I've ever heard from any Apple store ever in terms of stuff they've done. But for me personally, I can remember in 2009, I had an iPhone 3GS. I had a CPAP that had a humidifier on it. I put my phone down by the bed. Somehow it leaked. I woke up the next morning. My phone miraculously didn't explode, but it was plugged in a puddle. It was the charger had melted. Like, my 3GS was totally destroyed. Didn't have Apple Care. Didn't have any of that. I was a year into this phone. I take it to the Apple store in Caesar's Palace. I'm like, yeah, I did this. I screwed it up. It's all my fault. And they just gave me a new 3GS. Like, here you go. I had a laptop, a MacBook Air charger that was like worth $80 that was having a problem. That only if I heated it up and got the contacts right. Like, I'd have to turn the heat on in my house and sit the brick on the vent and let it heat up before the contacts would make. I take it into the Apple store. I'm like, yeah, this thing is just, I'm out of warranty.
I didn't even discover that.
Googling. Somebody showed me that online, like that, the similar problem. It's like, if you heat this thing up, the contacts will make a connection and then it'll work. I'm like, huh, that seems so crazy. It just might work. So I tried it. Sure enough, it worked for a while until it cooled down and then it would break contact. So I take it to the Apple store and I'm like, yeah, this is all messed up. I'm going to need a new one. And they just gave me another one, another $80 part, no charge. Here, take it. Just why not? So I've had several of these types of experiences. Every experience I've ever had, except for the one last year where we talked about my loaner iPhone, which was terrible. But other than that, they have been all across the board, just pleasant experiences. And this one really, really takes the cake. I mean, this is no other place I can think of would do what they did for you. So but it doesn't surprise me because that's how they roll. That's how they typically do go above and beyond, particularly if you go and you get somebody that's knowledgeable and they see, like, hey, this is, you've, if only they listen to the show, they would know that you've never had a positive experience with either of the two MacBook Pros that you've had, right? Because you returned one. This was the replacement.
Right. The first one I got, I mean, I ordered it. The keynote happened and I was reloading the page until they showed up on the website to order that MacBook. I was so excited. And then to get it in, and immediately keys are not working. And, you know, when I brought it in, they're like, we can't do anything about it. Just return it and order a new one. So I returned it. And so, you know, it was another month before I had it again. It's been a trial with this MacBook Pro. And that Ben, the guy that waited on me, he didn't say as much, but I think one of the reasons he's done this is because I think they've seen some problems with this version of the MacBook Pro. You know, he knows, number one, he could tell I was a fan and I knew what I was talking about, you know, because I went in just willing to, okay, I'm just going to pay to get this fixed. And I even said to him when I'm going to just pay to get it fixed and I might just sell it. I'm just unhappy with it, you know, and just use my older one. You know, he's like, no, you know, we're going to make this guy, you know, happy with Apple today. So I was, like I said, I was pretty happy. I immediately called you, immediately called Brad. I'm like, this is something you just can't do over text.
You know, the great thing about this too, and we've mentioned this before, even if you weren't a fan of the brand before, even if you were indifferent, if you were just a normal guy off the street and this happened to you, do you think you would ever look for another type of laptop ever?
That's totally a good point.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's a win a customer or you know, keep a customer who's already, you know, in your camp. Yesterday, I actually went into the same Apple store yesterday to pick something up, and I ran into him, and that's I didn't get his name the first time, and you know, I really wanted to call out Ben. So I talked to him a little bit yesterday and told him, yeah, I got it ordered, and I ordered the AppleCare Plus, and you know, he was just touting all these numbers as far as, he's like, yeah, that AppleCare Plus is really a good deal because before we would have charged you X amount for a screen on that 15-inch, and now it's like
$99.
$199, yeah, is the, you know, the liquid damage is the most expensive one at $199, you know, and still, you know, he's like, it's just such a great deal. You know, you've got 3 years now where that laptop is fully covered for anything that happens to
you. You could just pour a Sprite on it every day if you wanted to.
And me being a road warrior like I am, I mean, that kind of stuff happens. I mean, you don't expect to damage your laptop, but as much as I'm on it, you know, and I'm on it in weird places like sitting at the airport or sitting at the, you know, the club lounge at, you know, whatever Sheraton in whatever city I happen to be in, you know, stuff like that happens. So he went beyond a Call of Duty. So just, you know, go buy a Mac, people.
If I may make a recommendation, of course, you will get an email if you haven't already for the survey. Always, and I always fill those out. I mean, I do it for a lot of the places that I go, but in particular, when I go to the Apple store and have a positive experience like that, I give them the 5 stars across the board or whatever, the highest ratings, and then I'll single them out in the comments and say, you know, hey, this was the employee that did this. He went above and beyond. He helped me out. This is going to keep me a customer. Like, I throw all that stuff out there so they know, you know, you do stuff like this, you're keeping somebody for a long time. So don't forget. And you know what? Next time you go back, if he's there, get a picture, tweet it, Facebook, you know, let people know that you had such a good experience with this. Cause it's so many people that I talk to that, well, I'll just go buy this crappy thing at Best Buy. Here's why you don't do that. Here's why you go and you have this experience, because you won't get this anywhere else.
I totally should have took a selfie with my hero Ben.
You know where he works. You can always find him. All right, moving
Ben out on a date. I'm gonna buy him dinner.
If only AppleCare Plus existed whenever my son's laptop got stepped on.
Yeah, that would have saved it. And particularly, this seems like it was tailor made for you. So let's talk about iPads for a minute, Jim. You got your
This is huge.
I've been a big fan of the 12.9 ever since it came out in the fall of 2015. That's what I've been using for the last 18 months or so. I love the 12.9. It is a great iPad. When the keynote happened and they announced them, I immediately, you know, picked the one with the 512 and the cellular, the space gray, boom, done. Cart ordered one-handed while I'm talking to someone else. Like, didn't even think about it. And then, of course, as we do, we were all talking to each other. And the 10.5, Jim was like, I'm getting a 10.5. I'm leaving the 12.9 for the 10.5. And I thought, maybe I should do that. So I ordered another one at the same time, knowing I was going to take one of them back. Of course, I did a little bit of traveling. 12.9 came in first, quickly, and I was able to take that with me on my trip to Kentucky last week. I was watching Silicon Valley and Better Call Saul in my hotel room. It was great. It was doing wonderful. Cellular was just, it was fantastic. And the 10.5 arrived while I was gone. I come back. I set them up. I send the guys a picture of, here's the 12.9 and the 10.5. We're going to have a real bake-off real quick. And something I never thought would happen, I preferred the 10.5 to the 12.9. And I ended up taking the 12.9 back to the Apple store. Which for me, I never thought I would do that. I honestly thought, I was telling these guys leading up to it, it's like, you know, I don't even know why I did this. I'm probably going to keep the 12.9. It'll be fine.
Once you got your 12.9 before the 10.5 come in, you're like, I may not even open it up. I might just go ahead and take it back. I was pretty shocked when you told us that you'd switch, because I certainly didn't see it coming.
I was very shocked. I wanted to not like the 10.5. I fully expected. I mean, I had this narrative in my head already, and I thought, I know how this is going to shake out. Why even bother to put them through their paces? I'm going to keep the 12.9. So why even beat around the bush? Let's just go ahead and get this done. But something said, open it up, try it out. Let's see how you like it. The keyboard, it is a full-size keyboard. It is a little bit different, but not bad at all to type on. It's Jim did a comparison internally. We were looking, and it's not that much smaller than the iMac keyboard. I mean, it's just a tiny, couple millimeters or something. It's practically the same size keyboard you'd have with the iMacs. And I type on that all the time. So the typing wasn't bad. The removal of the, not the removal, the thinning of the bezel to make it the 10.5 in the nine, pretty much the same form factor as the 9.7 is really, really good. You get a lot more real estate. I was listening to the, I think, I want to say it was the Upgrade podcast with Jason Snell and Mike Hurley yesterday. And one of the things they compared it to, they said, if you wanted to do real work, quote unquote, real work, keep the 12.9. If you're doing mostly consumption and some creation, go with the 10.5. I'm going to disagree with that a little bit. The 10.5 is practically an 11-inch MacBook Air. Think of it like that. You can use this just fine. Now, the only compromise, the biggest compromise is that with the 12.9, you can run two full-sized iPad apps on that screen, whereas you get iPhone-sized apps on the 10.5. But honestly, it's not that big of a deal. You're not going, if you're having to split your attention between two different apps, having one that's that smaller size isn't really going to be that much of a compromise, or at least it isn't for me. I do a lot of stuff on it. The thing that I had to think about that helped me make that decision was, if I'm at home and I'm using a computer, I'm on a 27-inch iMac or I'm on a 15-inch MacBook Pro. So those are mostly my main computing paradigms. If I'm doing something where I need that portability. The portability came to be much more important than I thought. I missed that form factor. I didn't think that I did, but I really, really did miss that form factor a lot more than I thought I would. In a perfect world, if I were totally made of money, I would probably have them both. But if I had to make the choice between one or the other, and I've done this with phones too. I went from a plus size phone to a regular phone and back to a plus size phone. Who knows, you know, when the next iteration of the iPad comes out, maybe I'll switch back to the larger one. But this is pretty nice. I will be flying in about a week and a half to Dallas briefly. And this will be my first time to take the 10.5 on a plane. I'll see how it stacks up compared to the 12.9 and see what I want to do there. But I'm honestly, this is a lot better than I thought it would be. So I'm very, very happy about that.
I was real pleased with it on my flights last week. You can move it up closer to the seat in front of you, so it gives me more typing room to stretch my arms out to try to type instead of having to just hug my arms. Because the 12.9 filled up pretty much the whole tray on a Southwest flight, whereas the 10.5, I could push it up closer to the seat in front of me. I had a little room to push my arms out to type. Yes, you're right. You don't get the side-by-side apps. I didn't use that much, and I think with the new dock on iPad plus with the Alt-Tab switching that you already had, I don't think I'll miss the side-by-side view that much. Not that, I mean, you have it still. You don't get full size. What did you call them? It was like you get the mobile or the...
Yeah, you get the iPhone
style. The slimmed down version. Yeah. So I just... And the form factor for laying on the couch or laying in the bed and looking at the 10.5 is just... That half a pound makes a huge difference.
I think the screen size is probably the biggest difference for me. Every time that I've flown with the iPad Pro, the 12.9, and I flew a lot with it in 2016, I could never use the keyboard on the tray. Like, it was just, I always had a little iPad stand that I would put it in, and even then it was still kind of cramped. I could actually see myself being able to use the keyboard on this one, so that's kind of nice. Not that I plan on typing a lot on planes. There's always some goofball sitting next to you watching what you're doing. So having the 512 gigs of storage is going to be nice for movies, TV shows, that type of thing. Not that I was at a shortage with the 128 that I had before, but now I can really go crazy and load up every possible thing that I would ever want to see or watch. But I've been using it for the last few days, and, you know, that form factor, man, I really did miss it. And it really is a lot more real estate than what I had before. An added benefit of this, which I also didn't anticipate. So last weekend, I sent you guys a picture as I was driving from Georgia to Kentucky. And I had the 7.9-inch Android tablet as my Waze tablet. And this is sort of my second trip in using that. And man, it really didn't go well. Even though that little Android tablet has a built-in GPS, the whole tethering thing just made it a subpar experience. Waze was so incredibly wonky on it that I ended up using Google Maps more often than not, because at least that worked better. The upside is now with the 10.5, I actually got a new mount yesterday. So I can actually mount my iPad if I wanted to use full-sized Waze and my wife's car on a trip. So I didn't plan on that, but having the built-in cellular is so nice. I also looked at my data usage this month, and I think collectively between five or six lines, we're up to 45 gigs, and I think 24 of that was me. So 24 on one device, on just my phone. I think that the iPad, I only had it like 3 days, part of that billing cycle, and I still managed to get 5 or 6 gigs on that. So,
and that's before you even made it out of Georgia.
Probably. You've been using your iPad, Jim. What do you think about it?
So I was going to say that the biggest thing for me has been the size. I just find myself using it a lot more around the house where normally I would sit on the couch or in the bed and be on my phone doing stuff. I've really found myself on the iPad more now, you know, with the keyboard popped off, just me and the iPad. That's been real enjoyable. And the other thing is I got cellular this time, and I know you did too. That's just such a nice thing to be on the road. I mean, I have decent internet here at home, but I'm not home, but, you know, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And so to just be able to have that device be connected to LTE wherever I'm at, not have to worry about tethering it to my phone. Tethering is, you know, it works, but it's a pain. And then you end up with the blue bar on your phone.
And it's slow compared to having a native cellular connection. True. It just is.
Yeah. Just having that LTE, and it's nice, but the form factor and that screen, if you haven't seen the new 10.5 or 12.9 inch iPad in person, you owe it to yourself if you're an Apple fan to head down to your Apple store or wherever, Best Buy, and check out the screen, because the new 120 megahertz screen has to be seen to be believed. I mean, it really, you look at it and it's like you're seeing a Retina screen for the first time. I mean, it really is it amazing. And I mean, it's great in all things, you know, you can be in Word or Safari or whatever, but you know, if you're playing a game with any kind of movement or anything like that, I mean, it really shines.
Yeah, the 13-inch screen is probably the best screen that they make. I mean, it is amazing. Honestly, it is nice. And if you never travel, if your primary use case is to be around the house and you don't really want a laptop, I think the 13-inch iPad Pro would be a fantastic computer to have. I mean, it's really great. But if it's a secondary device for you and it's something you use occasionally, I think the 10.5 is more than enough. In fact, there was an article, we're going to link to this in the show notes. It talks about how the iPad Pro and iOS 11 will finally kill the MacBook Air. And I won't go into all of it here, but it's a pretty compelling argument. You should take a look at it. I can totally see this with iOS 11 becoming what it is. I could see the 11-inch MacBook Air finally going away. The screen is far inferior. You can have a keyboard when you need it. And something that no one ever really mentions, though it is mentioned in that article, is that there is no cellular connected MacBook natively. So you have this incredibly fast hardware, and you got this souped up OS, and you can be constantly online. And if you have an unlimited data plan, I mean, that's an unbeatable combo. I mean, this breathed new life into my iPad and having an unlimited data plan, which I fully intend to exploit.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I'll be interested to see what my data usage is this month, because I did have the iPad connected to Wi-Fi at the hotel some, but I've used it quite a bit standalone.
What was funny for me was we were in the hotel last week, me and my wife, and you know, she was doing Facebook and things like that, and I was not. I never got on the hotel Wi-Fi, and she's sitting there constantly man, this Wi-Fi is just terrible. And I'm over there streaming Better Call Saul in 1080p HD, just full on, like, I don't know what you're talking about. Sorry,
I don't know what kind of problems you're having.
You're interrupting my show over here with your internet problems. So the Microsoft exec who's responsible for Surface says that the iPad Pro is Apple's response to Surface. And it sounded like, hey, this validates our product that you guys said was so terrible a few years ago. Now you're finally chasing us. And you know, while it's not unexpected that Microsoft would say something like that, I really don't think it's the same thing at all. And the reason for that is that Microsoft took their desktop OS and they put that square peg in a round hole. And you had a primarily desktop OS that was not a mobile OS. That was your operating system. And if you had an iPad Pro that was running Mac OS, that would have been a valid comparison, I think. But I think Apple's taken the opposite approach, and you have a mobile-first OS, and they've slowly added these desktop conventions one by one, and they've changed them to be mobile-first type applications. The drag and drop's a perfect example of where you can use multiple fingers to do things that you couldn't do on a Mac today, and I think it's the best-suited paradigm, whereas Windows was just sort of bolted onto a touch surface and said, here you go.
Here's some square Metro icons to go with it.
Yeah, you slap some tiles on Windows. I mean, come on, this was the company that put a start bar on their phones way back when they did the Windows Mobile. Innovation's not really, you know, if they're going to live in the glass house, they can't really throw the bricks at this one. What are your thoughts on that, Jim?
I agree with you. I mean, after I talked with Ben at the Apple store there and he took my Mac back, I went walking around the mall after. And when I was talking to you, I was actually in the Microsoft store and I said, hey, I'm looking at a Surface, and I just kind of joking with you. I mean, they're nice little devices.
The sales guy runs over and is like, you want one?
You know, the screen is, I don't know how to describe the screen on the Surface laptop. It looks really good, but for some reason, just the shininess and the way they implement their, it, you know, their Retina type. I mean, because it is a high density display, whatever high high DPI. That's what it is, high DPI.
Are they using OLED screens? Because I know Apple's not, and that's sort of a criticism that some people have, but maybe the services are. I honestly don't know.
It just looks weird to me. I don't know. Something about that screen, their high DPI screens just look weird. And even on my MacBook, even the 15-inch or the 13-inch, when I'm running Windows in high DPI mode, it still just kind of looks weird. Like, it just isn't made for that. I don't know how to describe it. It's just the apps a lot of times, you know, they work with it, but they're just not made for it. The keyboards for the Surfaces feel great. And I've heard that the pen that works, you know, the stylus, whatever you want to call it, for the Surfaces is really good. I mean, I think they're great devices. If you're a Windows lover and, you know, you travel a lot, the Surface is probably a good device to have. You know, I can run a Windows 10 VM on my older Mac and it works fine, much less the 15-inch new one with the faster process in it. And it's just as fast as any Windows laptop that any of my colleagues are actually working on. So
for most people, if you don't do anything that's really specialized, that's Windows specific in Office, an iPad, I prefer actually using things like Word and Excel on my iPad more than I do my Mac, because I think those were actually... they put a lot more care into those versions than they do the... I mean, the Mac version has gotten a lot better. The one that was for the equivalent of 365.
I actually tweeted a couple weeks ago that I think Outlook for Mac is actually better than Outlook for Windows now. Like, the Outlook for Office 365 that you install on Mac, I put both my work accounts in Outlook for Mac just to kind of try it out. And it has some features that are a lot nicer than the version for Windows. You can actually do a unified inbox on Outlook for Mac, which you can't do on Windows. The calendars integrate better with each other on Outlook for Mac. You know, they're just different, you know, threading options at least that I found. You know, it just, and I tweeted about it, and I actually got a reply from, you know, Microsoft customer service, whatever, like, well, thank you, you know, whatever, you know. But I really think it's true that, you know, they actually, for at least for Outlook, I don't do much Excel or Word editing on the Mac side, because I have found some compatibility differences where if I do a whole lot on a Word doc that is kind of important that every, you know, a couple different people are collaborating on, if I send it back to them, they'll have some issues with Windows where this style didn't implement right, or, you know, something like that. So I don't do too much editing on the Mac side like that, but for Outlook, it's great.
If you're using VBScript or something like that in Excel, or even, I guess, if you can do it in Word, I don't know, that stuff obviously does not translate to the Mac at all. But, you know, the nice thing about having a 365 subscription is that if you have a Windows VM on your Mac, let's say you really get into a spot where you need some of those features, they're not inaccessible to you. You can go in and legally install a copy of 365 in a Windows VM and still do what you need to do. Now, granted, if you're an iPad first life, you couldn't do that, but I prefer it actually on the iPad. Well, something worth noting too is that Office is free if you're on any device that's under 10 inches. So the 10.5, you cannot run Office for free if that was something you used to do because of the size limitation. But 365, especially if you're in that world, it's actually a pretty reasonable purchase. I use my OneDrive stuff in addition to Dropbox and all of that. And it's great.
I get it all through work, so we're allowed to install a personal copy on a personal machine, and then I have a personal copy on the Mac side of that laptop, and then on the Windows VM, so two copies, one laptop.
Designing HTML signatures and Outlook on Mac is near impossible. The beta version, you can do it. You can't on the full version. I hate HTML signatures anyway. I see people who do that, and then if you look at Outlook on iOS, you just get their email, and you see 50 attachments to that email before you even get to the message. It's the worst thing in the world. That should just die. The last bit of snark I'll throw in there, though, is that the exec said, we don't really look at Apple, as if to say we don't follow Apple. And something that I noticed is, too bad their OEMs can't say the same, because Ultrabooks are all basically MacBook wannabes that run Windows. So they can take the high ground themselves, but let's face it, the Windows world really does steal that hardware style all the time.
Yeah, if you walk through Best Buy and just look at some of the other laptops, if you don't get close enough, everything looks like a MacBook or a MacBook Pro. And then you get close enough and you realize that it's some other brand. But I mean, just from a distance, they all look like MacBooks.
Yeah, aluminum's really popular now for those for the unibody design. So give Apple their due, Microsoft. Let's see, not much else to talk about this week. Tesla is said to be looking into launching its own in-car music streaming service. You guys hear about this?
Yeah, it's kind of silly and a waste of time unless they're going to have what's his name? What's the Tesla guy's name?
Elon Musk.
Old
Muskie.
It's like they're going to have him personally DJing your Beats 1 radio or your curated playlists or something. It's just kind of strange.
I think that would actually be the definition of the 1% music club right there.
I think there are plenty of other services that exist. I mean, that they could easily, they would probably pay Tesla to be the default option in the car. So why they need to build their own, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, you know, when you're a filthy rich billionaire, I guess, you know, you can just do whatever you want.
If you're going to enter a market, you should do something that no one else has done. And this market is actually pretty saturated as is. And outside of the U.S.
He's gonna stream it from Mars. That's what the trick is.
Outside of the U.S., Tesla has a deal with Spotify. So Tesla outside of the U.S. is the – Spotify is the in-car music service outside of the U.S. for Tesla. So that's – again, this seems like – why would they even bother with this? This just seems silly.
Maybe they should just buy a title.
Probably could get it for a pretty good discount before too long. So the new 27-inch iMac that came out has up to 80% faster graphics at compute tasks compared to the previous model, which it made my, the meme where the guy's grabbing his chest like he's having a heart attack. That was me. Because like a year and a half ago, I get this Mac. I'm like, oh, this is great. This is wonderful. And now it's just utter garbage.
Yeah, you're still looking at a beautiful, 27-inch?
5K.
5K display. Yeah, you'll be all right. And you've got that Windows Powerhouse VR machine that you built too, so.
That is true. I can always draw my eyes on that nice Windows box that's over here. But man, that is...
What's that comparison? So I wonder what's the speed comparison, I wonder, between the new 27-inch iMac and then the Windows machine that you were able to build a year ago? That would be an interesting comparison.
For the next show, I'll look into that because I know that I think Ars Technica, which is where I think I linked this article from, I think has the Geekbench scores for the new iMac. So I can just run the Geekbench stuff on mine and see where it comes out. I wonder. That is a great question. I'm betting on the GPU side. I'm hoping that the 1080 that I have is a little bit better than the AMD stuff they're using or the Intel stuff they're using. I think it's AMD. Yeah, it's AMD. So I'm hoping. I'm going to put money on my Windows rig, but we'll see. I would love to be proven wrong on that. CPU-wise, I'll bet they'll blow me out of the water, but I do have a very fast i7 that's in there, so who knows? It was 1 year ago next week that I actually built this thing. So
yeah, that's some homework for you.
Happy to do that. That'll be fun. That'll be a nice little homework assignment. So it came out this week that Apple hired the Sony execs responsible for Breaking Bad, Rescue Me, and The Blacklist. So Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Amberg are the former presidents of Sony Pictures Television. And it looks like Apple is about to get serious in creating its own original content. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's pretty awesome because I feel like it's something that they've been sort of ramping up to do for a little while now. I mean, they've got their own packaged TV interface and they're including all these other apps, if you will, on their device that have original content already. And, you know, we'll see the Amazon Video app coming with the probably in the fall sometime onto the new version of tvOS. So I feel like it's just time, and it's definitely something they need to get into because everything else that Apple does just kind of turns to gold, short of, you know, some missteps that they've made over the years. But we haven't seen them make a misstep with TV, Apple TV or tvOS yet.
Have either of you started watching the app TV show? I haven't watched any episodes yet. The reviews that I kind of just saw sprinkled around, I didn't really read them. I just kind of read the headline and none of them really liked it that much.
So I've watched the first episode of Planet of the Apps, and I plan on watching the rest of it too. I really wish that they'd follow the Netflix model and release everything all at once. I don't like the appointment viewing type things because I'm going to forget. But I did watch the first episode. It's very, very much a reality TV show, that type of vibe. And, you know, you have Gwyneth Paltrow and Jessica Alba and Will.i.am and Gary, was it Vaynerchuk, the Silicon Valley VC?
Gary V.
That's right, Gary V. on Twitter. They're sitting around and they're getting pitched these ideas and they have to, it's kind of like The Voice where it's like they have all their names and, you know, they decide who they're going to work with if they like an app. And, you know, it's reality TV fare. If you're used to this sort of thing, if you sort of dig that sort of thing, if you don't, it's not like you're going to be watching it with rapt attention. It's not Breaking Bad or something. I mean, it's in that regard, it's entertaining, I guess, not very good.
Do you think it's kind of a first step, you know, that thing where Apple's like, we're just going to kind of dip our toes in the water and then we can go from there? It's more of that kind of thing.
It does feel like just sort of a tentative putting something out there. So we have Carpool Karaoke that'll be out in August. There is an untitled biography of Dr. Dre, or sort of a fictionalized account. I don't know exactly how that works, but that's coming before too long. They're not doing House of Cards right out of the gate or something like that, but they're definitely, you know, reality television doesn't cost a lot to do, so it's an inexpensive way. The thing that I find interesting about all of this is that Apple's made no bones about trying to get into this market for a long time. They're trying to push into this, and studios have just sort of stonewalled them, right? They don't want to make deals. They don't want to play ball. They're fighting them. And now Apple has over $200 billion in the bank. If they decide they want to enter this market, they're going to go and hire away all of your people. Like they can literally throw money at a problem and steal your creative people and come in there. And I mean, look at what Netflix is doing. Netflix is doing a pretty good job, and they've been spending like a drunken sailor hiring people, making shows, and they don't even have to be great high rated shows because they don't release the ratings numbers on that. They just make what they want to make. You know, if something comes back, they rarely cancel. They have had a couple of high profile cancellations lately with, I think it was Sense8 got canceled and The Get Down. But not a lot of the stuff they've made has actually been canceled, and they don't have nearly as much money as Apple does. So if Apple really wants to get serious into this, they can come in and write some big checks and get some exclusive content, get some buzz going. This, I don't know, if I were the head of a studio, I'd much rather make deals than go head to head with somebody that has that much capital sitting around that they can just throw at a problem. The thing that's been said about Netflix is that studios are really sort of responsible for the ascendancy of Netflix because they would sell off their back catalog or whatever else, and they were happy to take that money, but they have now built their biggest competitor that's going after them with original content. So they sort of created their own beast. I know they don't want to do that with Apple, but they can't do that with Apple because Apple already has $200 billion in the bank. So you think that if you would, it seems to me, playing devil's advocate, if you just get on board with them and sort of work with them a little bit, you're already getting your content to other providers. You're sort of hedging your bet, sort of like iTunes versus Amazon Store versus Google Play versus all of that. You know, if you have a movie and it's available in all of them, there's really nothing special there. But if you're cutting these deals and getting your content that so it's being distributed on the Apple TV, you know, it's still good. People are still going to see it. You're still going to make money. But now you've gone and sort of pissed off this behemoth with unlimited capital that's going to come back. And if they're making moves like this, this is just the first one, right? They're going to start doing more and more and more. I mean, look at Netflix. Netflix is making a Martin Scorsese movie with Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci, right? I mean, I've watched Casino like a billion times. I love that movie. All those movies they've done, Goodfellas, all that stuff. They can throw money at that. I don't know if you guys watched the movie that came out last month with Brad Pitt called War Machine, which was the sort of a telling of the Stanley McChrystal story in Afghanistan, which is kind of a sort of a goofy sort of movie. It was a little bit sillier. Brad Pitt's performance was a little bit more like Burn After Reading to me, sort of exaggerated, sort of like an impression than what I expected. It's still an entertaining movie. But again, they're going after these folks. They have a Will Smith movie coming out in December, I think it is, where he's a LA cop and like orcs are real. And they're dealing with orcs and Dungeons and Dragons and Game of Thrones type crap in LA. Stuff that a studio is never going to make, but they're dropping like 40 million, 50 million, all these mid-priced studio movies that they used to make, they don't make anymore. They're making it Netflix. Apple can turn around and do that same thing, right? This is nuts.
Apple be like, oh, that 50 million just fell out of my pocket. Let me get that real quick. You know, just like, let me pick that up. It's like you drop a quarter walking down the street.
Is that Scorsese movie you were talking about? Is that the one about Bernie Madoff?
No, that was an HBO movie that's already come out. This is called The Irishman or something like that. It hasn't been made yet. It's like a $100 million movie. But the Bernie Madoff one's already on HBO, and that was a completely different thing. But no, the funny thing, Tim Cook has more in his couch cushions than Netflix is going to spend on this stuff, right? They have all this money, and they could make some really cool Apple exclusives. I don't think they should be distributing it through Apple Music. I think it's really weird that they called their service Music, and they're now doing TV shows and kind of like naming it iTunes and then putting everything under the sun in it. It's like, couldn't you guys have come up with a better name for this than calling it Music? And now we're making our own TVs and movies through this. It's like, that doesn't seem weird.
Well, they already have iVideo, right? They already have iMovie, so they can't call it iMovie.
Something would have been better than just calling it Music. And this is where you watch your TV shows, in the Music app. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess that's also part of the proliferation of the TV app is you go and you tell it what you're looking for and it'll find where it is. It doesn't matter, but still seems kind of like an odd thing for me. I guess Amazon and Netflix have reason to be a little bit more scared if these types of moves are happening.
Amazon is scared of no one. So you didn't have it in the show notes. I was going to bring it up and just see what y'all thought about Amazon Whole Foods since that's happened since we talked that previous week. It kind of landed the next day, I think, last Friday, Saturday is when all that came down, and we recorded Thursday night. So any opinions there?
It seems weird to me that you have a retailer whose primary business model is to compete at the low end, right? They compete with basically Walmart. They're internet Walmart, basically. And you buy this premium brand that's known for high prices, right? Whole paycheck or whatever that people like to make the corny joke. And it just seems strange to me. I retweeted a link from the AJC.com a few minutes ago where it's saying that potentially Amazon could make, you know, the Whole Foods brand compete more like with Walmart in physical presence. And I'm thinking, why would you dismantle that brand? You have this thing where people are willing to pay a premium for something. Why would you devalue it and do it like that? I mean, Ben Thompson's take on this that he put on Stratechery.com is really worth a read. And it points out how hard the grocery market is for Amazon to break into.
Right. The margins are bad. Yeah, I thought Ben Thompson's take was really, really good. That was definitely my favorite article that I've read on this. I had not thought about it the way he presented it. And when I got down with his article, it really made perfect sense.
I've often thought, you know, when you're walking through a grocery store and you look around, you're like, how much of this stuff goes bad before they can sell it? How much of this stuff do they literally just have to throw away, particularly with produce and those types of things? And it's a big problem. And Whole Foods only controls, I think, like 1.2% of the whole grocery market in the U.S. Like, it is tiny. I remember when we finally got one near me and I was like, wow, this is a big deal. Now I know of about like four or five in the area. It started to grow. But, you know, I see Sprouts and some of those other competitors that I had never heard of before that have popped up to sort of steal that thunder, Earth Fair and a few of those. And I don't know, maybe there's something to this. I never would have pegged if someone was going to buy Whole Foods. I would have figured it would have been a Kroger or something like that, you know, Publix, something like that. I would have figured another grocery retailer would have bought them out to not compete with them. I would have never picked someone like Amazon, who's primarily an online business, to do something like that. Seems strange.
Brad, did they ever open that Whole Foods that was supposed to open in the ritzier part of Dallas? I remember this was a couple of years ago. They kept talking about there's going to be a Whole Foods in Dallas, and they were going to open it, and it was going to be right there, kind of close by where the hospital is, right?
Dallas, Jackson? You said Dallas.
Jackson.
Sorry.
So in Midtown Jackson, which is, you know, just maybe a mile north of the what we call Fondren, is a Whole Foods, and that's right around the part of town that's called Eastover. It's in an area that we call Midtown Jackson, so it's right there near Eastover, and it's the location of the first Starbucks that we had here in Jackson. It's still there. And there's a couple other grocery stores, but a lot of people go over there and eat. In addition to their just regular grocery business, they have like a little section where you go in there and sit down and eat. And it's sort of a buffet type style, like you would if you were going to eat at the deli in your local grocery store. But the problem with it is, and the food's great. The food's great. It's fresh, all that. But it's expensive. I mean, you could go to your Kroger or your local Piggly Wiggly or whatever and eat at the deli with a sweet tea, and it'd be $4. And you go over to Whole Foods and get a meal, and it's about $15.
The Piggly Wiggly.
Wow.
I was trying to pick out a place that was local and real, you know, country.
Distinctly Mississippi, that's for sure.
That's for sure. Well, I could have said Jitney Jungle, but they're not around anymore. So at least Piggly Wiggly is still around.
R.I.P. Jitney Jungle.
That's interesting. I mean, I just remember years ago, you know, I remember the Twitter hubbub from so many friends that I have in Jackson. I probably follow more people in Jackson than I do in Dallas still now. But, you know, just when that was announced, the, you know, Twitter just went crazy with, you know, we're getting a Whole Foods in Jackson and they're not putting it in Madison. They're going to put it in Midtown, which was just, you know, all the Madison people were like, you know, the horror, you know, that if you're going to get a Whole Foods and it's got to be up here. But, you know, I guess Mayor Mary wouldn't capitulate to whatever Whole Foods wanted. So.
And they have a high-end sort of grocery store there right next to the Apple store in Ridgeland, not Madison, but it's right there in the Madison area called Fresh Market. And I go to Fresh Market a good bit just because I'm over in that part of town a lot, even though I'm not one to specifically go to the high-end grocery store on purpose. It's right there, you know, if I'm dropping off my kid at school or whatever. I can't say I've ever gone into the Whole Foods more than maybe once. And I think it was there to just meet somebody for that expensive $15 lunch.
I've gone there looking for coffee and other type things, and I've had a few meals from the deli in the day, the one near my house.
The ones in Dallas have a really good beer selection. You know, you can get a lot of really, you can find some rarer craft beers there sometimes.
And that's what a lot of people were touting when it first came here too. It was like they were going to have an awesome beer selection. But when they opened, it was before the beer laws changed here in Mississippi, because all of our beer laws in Mississippi up until about 4 years ago were
less than 5%.
Right. It was, you know, circa prohibition as far as the laws. We finally got our percentage up to about 8.5 or 9% by volume. That's like 10.5 by weight.
Shout out to Raise Your Pints right here.
Shout out to Raise Your Pints for getting that on the books.
Well, of course, when they're building the Whole Foods, they always check the demographics. I read once that they would only build them when there was a certain amount of college graduates within like a 5 mile radius or something like that, or average income, something like that. There's some metric that they had used to determine where those things went. that was interesting to me at the time, but it's been so long, I can't recall.
Well, that's pretty much most of the families there in the Eastover area. They're going to be doctors and lawyers and other sort of high-priced professionals. So that does make sense.
Well, I think that's all I had for this week, guys. Do you want to cover anything else before we call it good?
I'm good.
That's it for me.
All right. Well, we will talk to you next time. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdle. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.